This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. When it comes to chronic kidney disease, the numbers in Malaysia are staggering. More than 40,000 people in Malaysia are on dialysis for kidney disease, and more than 100,000 Malaysians are expected to suffer kidney failure over the next two decades. So how do we fare in terms of managing chronic kidney disease? And you know, today we're going to be paying more attention to your diet when you actually have a chronic kidney condition. So joining me is consultant nephrologist Dr. Tan Lee Ping from Ara Damansara Medical Center.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay.
How are you, Meera?
I'm very well, thanks. If you have a question for Dr. Tan on chronic kidney disease or, you know, diet that's related to that, give us a call. The number is 03-77-332-900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or just tweet us at BFM Radio. You know, Dr. Tan, how serious do you think this problem is in Malaysia? I mean, I've given you some numbers. For some bizarre reason, I think those numbers are understated.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. I mean, unfortunately, chronic kidney disease, the prevalence is rising, and by any stretch of the imagination, but however we measure it, it seems to be increasing. And it's increasing because, unfortunately, Malaysians are getting more diabetic, more, you know, more troubles with high blood pressure, more troubles with obesity, you know, and all of these factor into organ problems. And the kidney being one of these organs, it just... you know, the likelihood of damaging your kidneys increase because we're getting more of these illnesses that we contend with.
All these lifestyle issues.
Yeah,
so can you explain to me how diabetes, for an example, will lead to chronic kidney disease or even hypertension?
Yeah, so, you know, diabetes is a very special thing. I mean, like, we still don't really completely understand how diabetes affects the kidney, but we have some idea. So when you have high blood sugar, in very simplistic terms, you know, high blood sugar causes an increase in oxidative stress or injury towards the kidneys. And because sugar is in the blood and bloodstream flows through these kidneys at a certain rate per hour, so all of that increased sugar gets exposed to our kidney tissue, and that causes a conglomerate of bad molecules or bad messages to happen in the kidney, and that slowly leads to a scarring to develop within the kidney, and that scarring leads to is a manifestation of the damage, and that leads to downstream problems because you get reduction in the function of the kidney as a result.
An impaired kidney function.
Yep.
What about hypertension?
Hypertension is a little bit different, but we think it's probably because the increased blood pressure is translated to the kidneys as a result of the increased flows within the blood vessels, and all of that passes through the kidney filter membranes, and that in turn causes damage as well, in very simplistic terms, of course.
Right. So besides diabetes and hypertension, does aging sort of impact the kidney as well?
Yeah, no. For some people, you know, you can be 104 and have perfectly good kidneys. So,
yes.
So it doesn't seem to be a definite thing. I mean, for a lot of us, I mean, as we age, you know, our cells decline, our cells undergo senescence, which is another fancy name for saying they age. And so, for a lot of us, yes, as we age, our kidney function naturally declines according to time. Nothing lasts forever. But it doesn't seem to be universal. Some people seem to have fairly pretty good kidney function despite the fact that they're in their 90s or 100s.
What do you think takes for good kidney? What will make for good kidney function when you're older?
What will make for good? Why? If you've got genes, you've got kidney. Well,
it cannot be just genes. I mean, you can't be blaming our parents for everything.
Well, I mean, like, I mean, if you have enough kidney function to dispose of the natural waste that you accumulate from day to day, and if your kidney function is adequate to maintain your blood pressure and so on, then I think you have good kidney function. You don't specifically need to pay attention to the number per se. The number doesn't really mean everything. I mean, as long as you have enough function to continue with your daily needs at the age of 90, I think that's perfectly good.
And what, you know, for a healthy kidney, what do you need? Lots of proper hydration. What else?
Ah, okay. So I see. So, yeah, you need adequate hydration, I suppose. Adequate hydration. You need adequate nutrition. And that's essentially it, really. If you take care of your own health, if you exercise, if you lead a healthy diet, if you drink well, you know, that's essentially all you need to do. The other things are all negative stuff, meaning you prevent yourself from getting other medical problems. You know, you prevent yourself from taking pills that you don't know, or medications you're not aware of. Those things are the negative things. You just try not to do those. But what can you do? You just need a normal, healthy lifestyle. That's pretty good.
Okay. Are you seeing younger people with chronic kidney disease? Because the number of diabetics in this country is really quite alarming. And we're seeing younger and younger people being diagnosed with diabetes. So are you seeing younger people with chronic kidney condition?
Yes, sadly, yes. I mean,
how young?
Different types of illnesses cause kidney diseases in different age groups. If you're talking specifically about diabetes, I've seen patients in their 30s coming in with kidney disease, what I think is due to their diabetes, which they were diagnosed maybe in their 20s or in their teens, you know.
But what does that mean for them? What does that mean for a 30-year-old to have kidney disease?
Unfortunately, if you are 30 years old and at that, you know, young age, you already have kidney disease, it means that there's a fair likelihood that the kidney is going to progress, it's going to deteriorate, its function is going to decline in time, and there's a fair chance that the kidney might fail, and you might be looking at a possibility of needing dialysis, which is essentially just replacing your kidney function.
Why is it downhill from there? I mean, is there no way of sort of trying to salvage the function of kidney function?
Yes, I mean, that's what we do, I mean, all day. I mean, we try to salvage what kidney function is remaining to our patients, you know, and however much function they have left, we try to sustain it and hopefully even improve it a little bit. But for a lot of patients, unfortunately, once they present themselves to us, especially, you know, for the 30 to 40-year-old or what have you, who are diabetic, the diabetes has actually led to a irreversible process that has actually occurred within the kidney. Irreversible process. The trick is to define how much of that irreversible process is actually there and how much of it is reversible. Mm-hmm. How much of that kidney decline is actually composed of the reversible component? How much of it is composed of the irreversible component? And whether we can reverse the reversible, you know, while preventing the irreversible component from actually increasing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the tricky part.
What are the reversible components?
Well, sometimes it's, for example, certain fluids, for example, they may not be drinking enough. Sometimes it's the sugar, it's not controlled enough. Sometimes the blood pressure is not optimized enough. Some of these things can be maintained. Sometimes the weight is too high. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these things contribute to a reversible decline in kidney function, which if we adjust, if we optimize, can lead to an improvement in kidney function. So that reversibility is what we're trying to adjust, you know, so to speak.
And when would it be irreversible?
Irreversible, you mean? When we've done all that, and despite everything we've done, there's an inexorable decline in kidney function, despite all the things that you've done. And that's when, you know, we sort of say, well, you know, I think you're looking at a possibility of some irreversible component of your kidney damage there.
Okay. When 30-plus-year-olds come to you and they're diabetic and you find that they have a gradual loss of kidney function, what are the signs and symptoms? I mean, what are they coming in based on what?
So, you know, with the kidney, and like the heart, I guess, if you have a heart condition, you generally feel, you know, you know, it's quite common people complain of chest discomfort. You know, they have breathing problems or they have chest pain and so on. With a kidney, unfortunately, you can lose a fair bit of kidney function and it can be fairly silent. I mean, it can be fairly invisible. I mean, you can't, you may not actually know that you're actually losing kidney function. So most people come into the clinic, they come in because they've noticed something, and the something may be they complain that their urine's a bit frothy or bubbly and so on, which sometimes we tell people is a reflection of the fact that you're losing protein from your bloodstream into your urine, and that's why it's become bubbly. Sometimes some people come in because they have leg swelling, and we tell patients that, yeah, sometimes if you have leg swelling, that may be a indicator of kidney damage. Some patients come in because of low back pain, and it's often a commonly held belief that if you have low back pain, it's because of your kidneys. So they come in, they have low back pain, and they say, hey, look at my kidneys, you know. Mm-hmm. And a fair amount come in because they've done a health check somewhere as part of their regular health screen, and they've detected some abnormalities and they want to get it checked out.
So is that the kidney function test that we all do?
Yeah.
When we do screening blood tests and we do all those, you know, gamut of tests when we sign up for these packages.
Yeah.
One aspect is the kidney function test.
Yes, yes.
Is that enough to determine whether there's something wrong with your kidney?
That's a pretty fair start. I mean, thankfully, most screening tests include a measure of the kidney's filtration ability. And so if you get that test done by your regular health screen or health check and so on, generally that's sufficient to sort of, in a very brief and a very simple screening manner, tell you about the generalized function of your kidneys.
Who do you think should get their kidney function regularly tested?
Okay.
Diabetics for sure.
Diabetics for
yes.
sure.
Okay. And is the standard kidney function test enough for diabetics?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, like, if you're a diabetic and you're getting a standard kidney function test every 6 months or so, you're ahead of the game. I mean, I think you're doing the right thing. Our problem is usually if we bump into people who actually don't get their tests done on time, and they don't get them regularly enough, or they don't really see their doctor to get these things done. So certainly diabetics. If you're hypertensive, you should get your kidneys checked. If you've got a family history of kidney disease, you should get your kidney function checked.
What about if you're prone to stones in the kidney, things like that? Should you get your kidney function test done more often?
Certainly, if you are prone to stones. Now, it's very interesting. I mean, like, some people are just, they're genetically, we call them stone formers.
Absolutely.
And they form stones. So if you can form, if you're a stone former, you should absolutely get your kidney function checked because, you know, heaven forbid you get a stone somewhere, it causes some obstruction, some blockage, and you don't realize it because it's not in a place that actually gives you pain. And your kidney function declines without you realizing it. So I think, yeah.
What, once every 6 months for all these people who, you know, are probably in the high-risk group?
Certainly for diabetics, once every 3 to 6 months. For everyone else, on average, you know, about 6 months to a year is probably pretty good.
So you have kidney disease, which is progressive, and what we call chronic kidney disease.
Yeah.
When does it lead to kidney failure? At what stage?
Right. It's... I sort of look at it in terms of a stage. It's sort of a gradient. You think about kidney function as a percentage, because that's an easy way to think of it. If we say we have about 100% kidney function, and by the time you get quote unquote kidney disease, you've reached about 60%. You know, as an analogy, 60% of function. And as you go through this whole process, and your kidney function slowly declines, it will reach the point that the kidney function is unable to sustain your body's own processes. And when it reaches the point that it no longer is able to sustain your body's own processes, we often say you're in failure, you know, because you need something that's external in order to get rid of the waste products that you accumulate and get rid of the fluids that you accumulate and so on. So we use that particular term when they've reached that point. And when is that point? It's a bit flexible because it depends upon each person to person. But for the most part, most people need the assistance of an external device when they're about fit function anywhere between 5 to 15%.
That's the dialysis you're talking about?
That's the dialysis.
So now the dialysis machine needs to take over the...
assist the body. I mean, if you're lucky enough to have remaining kidney function, it assists. If your kidney function is completely stopped or if completely your kidney's not working at all, then yeah, it takes over the care.
Then there's the next stage where it's called end-stage renal failure.
Correct, yes.
When does that set in?
The same sort of thing. When we call it end stage, it means that you've actually reached the...
Lost all sense of kidney function.
You've reached the part where we say, you know, whatever function you have remaining, it's usually 15% and below, you know, it's inadequate, it's insufficient for your body to continue its healthy processes, you know, of controlling its chemical balance, of controlling its, you know, the fluids, controlling your blood pressure, controlling your acid levels, etc.
Okay, so we'll come back and continue this discussion on chronic kidney disease. And of course, today's focus, I haven't come to is actually our diet and chronic kidney disease. You know, and I have huge concerns because, number one, you have diabetics and you have people who are hypertensive in this country, many of whom haven't even been diagnosed with it or walking around hypertensive. We have huge number of diabetics. And the other thing is we have a whole load of fad diets out there now. And how does that impact the kidney? We'll come back and find out. Sure. More up next. If you have a question, the number to call, 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or call us or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Tan Lee Ping, a consultant nephrologist from Aradhamansara Medical Center, in the studio with me. We'll continue this discussion up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. Ballpark figure, you're just talking about 15%, you know, and 5 to 15% when you come and, you know, less than 15% is end-stage renal failure. There you go. Just summary of our first 15 minutes of our discussion. Anyway, let's just recap. Chronic kidney disease is what we're discussing with Dr. Tan Lee Ping, consultant nephrologist from Aradhamansara Medical Center. Our focus today is on kidney disease and your diet. I think you've gone through quite a lot of information on the different stages, risk factors in Malaysia, diabetics being, one of the huge risk factor, given that we're so many diabetics in this country. It's impacting the younger generation because we're diagnosing more and more diabetics younger. Hypertensive people also at risk. And you've gone through how you have kidney disease and how that progresses to kidney failure and eventually end-stage renal failure. And kidney failure stage is probably when you have to now surrender to a dialysis machine, whether fully or not.
Right. So you have to get an assist from the dialysis machine, I suppose. I like to think of it that way.
That way, okay. Yeah. Rather than surrendering to the machine.
Like, okay. So you surrender. Oh no.
Isn't that what the case is? I mean, at end stage renal failure, that means it's failed.
Right. But I think a lot of it's like the reason I say that is because mainly for psychology. I mean, like a lot of our patients feel depressed when they reach that stage. And
we'll
feel
talk
like,
about that, the psychological.
Yeah, they feel like hope is lost, you know, like their kidneys have failed, you know, what's life going? But a lot of the wording that we try to use is to give patients back the sense of control. I mean, you're using it, you're using the device, don't let the device take control of you in a sense, you know? So not so much surrender, but to borrow its aid in order to continue to go on healthy living or continue to go on doing what you want to do in life.
Yeah. How do you counsel your patients in terms of psychology and how they cope with this disease?
It's tough. I mean, everyone who deals with it in their own special way. Yeah. I think every patient has a story. Every patient has a journey they've gone through. Everyone's got their unique stresses or worries. You know, I think we as health professionals stand there and we say, you know, you're not alone. I mean, we're here to help you. But you really try to take back control of the disease process rather than let the disease process take control of you and you fall under its sway, you know. You let it lead you to where you don't want to go. I think you can take a stand and say, I'm going to take control of this disease process. Let it not bring me fear, you know. Let me take control of this. It's just a machine, and it's just there to help me. And I am still going to be able to do the things that I want to do. And I think that positivity really lends itself to how, in the next X amount of years that you're going to have to deal with this, how well you deal with it. And I think we can clearly see the difference. I mean, people who are able to take control of their illness and don't let it dominate them, they do a lot better.
Right. So accepting is one, huge hurdle to get past.
Yeah, you have to accept the process happened to you. But it doesn't mean that you have to give in to it. I mean, you can take control of it. You can dominate it. Don't let it dominate you. I mean, it's dominated you already. But this is the time that you have to stand up and say, hey, you know, enough with that. I mean, you've taken me this far. Let me take back that control.
People with chronic kidney disease, are they on a lot of medication?
They are, unfortunately.
Isn't that like a double-edged sword? I mean, you're trying to prevent or keep this kidney going, but at the same time, you've got to take all these medications, and it needs to filter through the kidney anyway. Is that extra burden on the kidney?
Right. I mean, I think that's a lot of that fear out there, is that, oh, you know, I'm taking these ABCDEFG medicines, and on one hand, you're telling me that, you know, be careful about medicine, it's going to ruin your kidneys. On the other hand, you're giving me like 7-8 medications, dog. What the, you know, what are you doing?
Exactly, dog.
What are you doing to me?
Yes.
You know? But it's very interesting. I mean, like, medications are there to help prevent these things. And medications, of course, by the time they've come through the whole process, of which years and years of research and years of testing and people, we sort of know the chances that used within a specific dosing range, used within a specific frequency or prescription, whether or not it's going to affect your heart, your kidneys, and so on. So the doctor and the pharmacist, I mean, we're here because we know how to use these medicines, and I think that's the key point. Don't take medications and don't go and see your doctor. I think that's dangerous. You should go and see a health professional and let them guide you, because you're right. I mean, when you're taking 7 or 8 medications, the chances of them interacting with each other, the chance of them causing havoc, if you don't have someone to guide you through this process, is huge. So if you're worried about that, you go seek your health professional and let them guide you.
Okay, the right person.
Yeah.
We have a question here. I go to the gym quite often, and for the past few years, I've taken creatine supplement. My previous medical check have a higher than average creatinine amount and EGFR of 88. Now, the doctor advised me to stop taking protein and creatine supplements for 6 months, and I ran a renal check again, and my EGFR is back at 100 with normal creatinine levels. Am I saying this all right?
Not bad.
Does this mean taking creatine supplement is detrimental to my health? Or is there a correlation between bodybuilder who takes supplements with higher than average creatinine levels?
That's an interesting question. I must say I've gotten questions like this quite often, and that actually is reflective of the fact that we have more and more people who love going to the gym, and I think that's actually a good thing. I mean, it's good to be healthy. I guess there are a couple of issues that that have to be brought up first. Is that number one, every time you take a lab check and you check your whatever it is, you know, you understand that with each lab there is a percentage that has a bit of a fluctuation when you get your result. And with creatinine and with kidney function, the percentage fluctuations between 10 to 12%. So if you're getting a blood test today and you're getting a blood test next week and you're getting a blood test next month, and that fluctuations within the 10 to 12%, essentially it means that nothing much has changed probably. It's only if you exceed the 10 to 12% error range that we say, hey, you know, something has really altered in your system that we actually have to take seriously. So sometimes when we see patients and they get a creatinine that's X number, and the next time they come back and a creatinine X plus one, we say, hey, just check it again. I mean, and the next time you check it, we haven't done anything. Mm-hmm. And the creatinine's gone back to normal, and then the patient's very happy and we're very happy. But actually what's actually happened is that, you know, the result is just fluctuating within the mean.
So do a couple of tests,
right,
to have a baseline, and then...
Right. These tests or these values are all based on lab assays, which there is not 100% accuracy.
Okay.
That's number one. Number two is, of course, the fact that...
Is it detrimental?
Yeah, I mean, creatinine, which we use to estimate kidney function, is actually a byproduct of muscle metabolism. So if you're going to bodybuild, you're going to build muscle. So if you build muscle, you'll by default produce more creatinine. So sometimes if you're a bodybuilder, you're going to have a naturally high creatinine. Like, I always use this as an example. I say Arnold Schwarzenegger probably has a higher creatinine than Mother Teresa when she was around. So that doesn't mean the kidney function is different. I mean, it just means that he has more muscle. A more muscular guy is going to produce naturally more creatinine.
Yeah. Yeah, but doesn't that depend what Mother Teresa is actually eating as well? I mean, listen, that's a very... I got your point. It's what I'm saying. Okay, we'll come to diet, but we've got another question here. I'm a 56-year-old male, not diabetic or high blood pressure. I do exercise regularly, running about 50 to 60 kilometers a month. 3 months ago, I noticed a dull pain in my lower right back every morning when I wake up, persistently for the last 3 months. So So should I get a kidney function test? Also, I notice frothy urine sometimes. And this is coming from John. What's your feedback?
Hey, John. So I think if you're worried, absolutely get a kidney function test. I mean, get a blood test that checks your kidney filtering ability. That's the serum creatinine. Check a urine sample. And the reason I say that is because if you're worried, just go get it done because they're simply that easily accessible. It's not a test that you need to, heaven and hell to actually go through to actually get the test done. And you can walk to your neighborhood lab or your regular GP clinic and just get it checked out, and you'll alleviate all your fears, essentially. If I were to take a guess and I were to guess a person who's 56 years old doing 50 to 60 kilometers a month and waking up without pain, you lower it back, I would say you probably pulled some muscle somewhere.
Yeah.
But if you're worried about it, and because there is always this possibility that you have kidney problems, just got to get it checked out.
Yes. So go ahead and do that. Next question from Kelvin. How do I know I have a healthy kidney? How do I improve my kidney health? And how would gout affect the kidneys? First one, how do I have a healthy kidney? You've mentioned already just now with a lot of hydration and
exercising.
Correct.
Well, with adequate hydration.
That's right.
And leading a healthy lifestyle and being overall just healthy all around. And I think the things that we can measure are your blood pressure and sugar and body chemistry. And those things we use to tell us that our kidney is healthy. How do we improve it? Well, if your kidney is healthy, you can't really improve it. I mean, you can't perfect on nature. God has given you a healthy kidney, and if your kidney is healthy, that's it. Full stop. I think that is a very beautiful thing. We can't improve upon our kidneys if our kidneys are already healthy.
Okay.
They are well designed. They are well functional, and I think as long as they are working the way they should be, there's no reason to improve upon them.
And gout, does that affect the kidneys?
It can. It can. So the way gout can affect the kidneys is multifold. One of the common problems that gout can do is that gout's actually something we call the deposition of uric acid crystals. So uric acid are these crazy things that crystallize, and when they cause problems, it's actually when they start to deposit in our tissues. So, and they cause us pain, generally in your ankles and so on. But the way it can give you trouble in your kidneys is that these crazy crystals can deposit in our kidney tissue as well, and they can cause like inflammation around those areas, and it can recruit all kinds of bad cells to come and attack that area, and that's how it can damage your kidneys.
Okay, so if you are afraid or you are suspicious, you can always go do a kidney function test.
Oh, yeah, you can absolutely. I mean, if you are wondering about it at all, go and get it done because it's so simple.
Yes. So if you have a question, give us a call. The number is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or just tweet us at BFM Radio. Anything to do with your kidneys. And now we're going to go on to diet. Now, how important is diet, Dr. Tan? When you're living with kidney disease, how much does diet affect the progression of the disease?
Well, we are what we eat. So
thanks for the reminder. It's always you doctors bringing us, it's a reality check.
Well, if you're going to eat donuts, don't be surprised to become a donut.
Right. So diet, does that affect the progression?
It sort of does, to a certain extent. I'm going to go back to pick on diabetes because it's such an easy one to use. If you're diabetic and you're going to eat tons of carbohydrates and tons of processed foods and tons of sugar and so on, and your diabetes worsens, that's going to affect your kidneys. I mean, that's pretty common sense. If you have high blood pressure and you're going to eat a high salt diet and you're eating a lot of snacks, etc., and that's going to affect your blood pressure, then yes, that will affect your kidneys. If you have all of these things and you've controlled all the sugars and salts and things like that, what sort of dietary plan that we often advise our kidney patients to adhere to for those whose kidney function is somewhat more moderate to severely impaired, we say, well, one thing you can do, common sense-ish, is to say, let's not stress out your remaining kidney function so much. Let's let your kidneys have less things to do. So one of the things that you can do is you can limit your protein intake. You're not don't eat a ton of meat, save the planet, so to speak, eat more vegetables. And by doing that, you reduce the metabolic burden, the metabolic stress upon the kidney. So in essence, the kidney works less, and therefore its cells undergo less exposure to injurious insults, and so they probably survive a lot longer.
OK, can excess protein induce an impaired kidney or the reduce the function of the kidney?
If you...
And the reason I ask is there are some diets which are high protein diets.
Right. Let's think about a different analogy. If you were to go out today and you just ate red meat and you did a paleo diet, for example, or keto diet, and that's a high protein type diet, and you're one of those who just hate vegetables, would that necessarily result in you losing kidney function? Unless you were genetically inclined, it wouldn't. Your kidney is well capable of dealing with the stress loads that come with high proteins and so on. Natural proteins, of course. We're not saying, go out and eat all the fast food you can, just natural proteins. Our kidney is well able to handle those stresses unless you're genetically susceptible to damage as a result from those proteins. Unless those, high protein diets result in you becoming obese, for example, and obesity leads to a blood pressure problem, which again affects susceptible people. And if you are amongst those susceptible, then it might cause kidney damage. The problem is we have no idea who's susceptible or not. You don't walk around with a marker on your tag saying, "Hey, I'm a susceptible guy."
We haven't identified the gene yet.
We don't know it. We don't know it, and that's the problem. So it's because we don't know it. That's why it's a general blanket statement: don't eat too much
protein,
eat healthy, don't eat too much salt, don't eat much sugar, and all that. Even though we know that some people eat a ton of salt, a ton of sugar, and they are still fine, mm-hmm. as far as we can tell, because they are not genetically susceptible.
Yep.
So I think that's the key.
And do chronic kidney disease patients, do they generally understand how important diet is?
I think they all do. I mean, we drone it into them often enough that they understand. Whether or not they are able to adhere to it, it's something different because it's tough. I mean, food is such a big aspect of who we are, especially in Malaysians. Especially in Malaysia.
And are there dietary restrictions or strategies related to specific food groups or nutrients that they should be avoiding?
Right. I mean, it again depends upon the severity of the kidney function. I mean, if your kidney function is markedly declined and your kidney is unable to deal with waste disposal, specifically it can't deal with potassium, which is an element or a mineral that is controlled by the kidney, or it can't deal with the excretion of acids, or it can't balance out your acid base equations in your body, then you have to restrict those. You say eat a restricted potassium diet because your kidney can't get rid of it. Make sure you don't eat too much meat because meat will generate acids and your kidney can't deal with it. So it depends on the severity of the kidney function.
Okay. And everybody is quite aware of this when you have chronic kidney disease.
Well, when they come to see someone who takes care of kidney disease patients, is one of the important things that we try to educate them, because this is a lifestyle thing and it's something they have to do on a day-to-day basis and it's tough. So it takes many times before it can sink in. So it, I hope our kidney patients are aware of it.
What about liquids?
Liquids is difficult.
That's bizarre, isn't it? Because you would think that the body probably needs more liquids to actually flush it out or keep it going.
Yeah, surprisingly.
But there are restrictions to how much liquid you actually take.
Well, it also depends. So the truth is actually a little bit more complicated. So not every kidney patient requires a ton of liquids. The kidney deals with liquids sometimes in separate compartments than its disposal of waste or its manipulation of acid and base and all that sort of thing. So it's very interesting. Some people with poor kidney function have no problems with liquids. They can drink as much as they want and the kidney will work as efficiently as a normal kidney in getting rid of those liquids. For some patients, they need less liquids because the kidney may not be able to get rid of water. And so if you drink too much, if you tell them every kidney patient has to drink 10 glasses of water a day, for example, some patients can't deal with that. The kidney is unable to deal with that increase in water, and that water accumulates and it goes places that we don't want it to go. And on the other hand, some patients, they urinate way too much. And we say, you, patient, Mr. So-and-so, you need like more fluids than the other person. So it's quite individualized.
It really depends.
Yeah.
We have a question here. Does frequent urination of a non-diabetic indicate kidney problems?
That's a tricky one, simply because frequent urination could be due to a lot of different things. For sure, some people with kidney problems have frequent urination. On the other hand, frequent urination also could be problems with the bladder, the prostate, could be due to drinking too much water. You know, so there's many different things that go into the complaint of frequent urination. And the first thing is to establish whether or not there is frequent urination. Sometimes that's also a perception. So it's a difficult one.
Okay. And we'll come back and find out whether or not, what are some of the biggest dietary mistakes that chronic kidney patients actually make, as well as whether or not you can, you know, go on with your day-to-day routine as a chronic kidney disease patient, as well as if you are on dialysis, you know, can you exercise? How much can you actually do? We'll come back and finish up this discussion. If you have a question, the number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. If you have just joined us, I'm Meera Sivasodhi in our Health and Living segment. Dr. Tan Lee Ping, a consultant nephrologist from Aradamansara Medical Center, in the studio with me. We're discussing chronic kidney disease and your diet. Now we have a call from Minghua. Minghua, you have a question. Hi, Minghua.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi, Dr. Tan. This is Minghua here.
Hi, Minghua.
Hi. I just have a question that I have a habit of drinking almost a liter of water every morning.
Yeah.
After I wake up, and then I will go to the toilet quite often, almost every hour or so, for the next 2 or 3 hours. Just want to know whether this is normal and how will it affect my kidney function.
Why?
Okay. Thank you very much, Minghua.
Yeah, thank you, Minghua. Without knowing anything more, I suppose the first inclination I have to answer this particular question is the fact that your kidneys are working perfectly, because if your kidneys are functioning as they should and you're drinking a liter of water in the morning and your body is telling your kidneys, I don't need that liter of water, then the kidneys are doing their job to get rid of that liter of water. And that may explain why after you drink that water, you're going to the washroom quite often after you consume that fluid. That's the way your kidneys are supposed to work. I mean, your kidneys are a regulator of body fluids. So if your fluids exceed that which your body requires, your kidneys are going to do their job to get rid of it. And that's the beauty of the kidney.
Well, a lot of people believe in that, you know, 1 liter or whatever water in the first thing in the morning.
Mm.
What do you think of it? I mean, do you think that contributes to a healthier kidney?
I think if you drink half a liter or whatever, it's fine too, as long as the kidneys are working well. I mean, the truth is that your body will work regardless of how much liters of water you drink in the morning or not, in fact. I mean, they're designed to work that way. If you wake up feeling thirsty, that is your body's way of telling you you need to put in some fluids because it's dehydrated. So you put in that fluid and your kidney will deal with that fluid as it goes. There's no real need to fine tweak or fine tune nature, so to speak.
Okay, but the 1 to 2 liters of water or 2 liters of water a day still stands.
Again, the truth is probably that there's no specific number you need to actually deal with. I mean, for the most part, we're talking about just general healthy living. So general healthy living is such that your body actually has a mechanism to actually control the amount of water you actually need. And this water is defined by a thirst mechanism. If your body actually needs water, your thirst will be triggered and you will feel thirsty and you'll go and drink. And that's how your body acquires the fluids it needs to sustain its regular healthy life. And so that thirst mechanism often is linked to about 7 to 8 glasses of water, which is about 1.5 to 2 liters of water. And that's approximately how, you know, most people think about this. But there's no magic number. I mean, if you're in, I'll give you an example. And I used to work in North America and I hardly drank because I hardly needed to. I mean,
and
it was cold.
You're a nephrologist.
Yeah, but that's the thing. See, that's the thing. You're so cold and you probably drink about three or four glasses of water, and that's enough for you, because you don't sweat, you don't you know your body really that has no loss of water, so there's no need to put water back in. On the other hand, if I was in a desert in Saudi Arabia, for example, you sweat like mad, and then you probably will be drinking like 2 to 3 liters of water a day. So the water estimation is actually not a fixed number. I mean, you can probably figure this out in a very different way. If you're in an aircon room, an air-conditioned room the whole day, chances are you're not really drinking all that much, isn't it? And if you drink, you'll probably be escaping to the washroom like every 1 to 2 hours because your body's like, I don't need this water.
So what are you saying, that we should surrender to the thirst mechanism?
I'm saying your body's a lot more smarter than we think.
I mean, so pleased to hear
that. It's absolutely smart.
Because I don't like drinking water.
Oh, now, hang on.
I've said it. I have admitted that. I drink when I'm thirsty.
Hang on.
And I've heard comments like, you shouldn't be drinking when you're thirsty. You should be drinking. Because when you're thirsty and you drink, it means it's late.
Okay. Well, you know, water is beautiful. I love water. It tastes so good. But no, I don't think so. I mean, if you're thirsty, it just means that you need water and you just drink
it. I'm not going to overthink this. I'm going to just run with you. Are there dietary mistakes that chronic kidney disease patients make?
Right. Because we are human. Chronic kidney disease patients love the same things that non-chronic kidney disease patients like: snacks, processed foods,
high salt
diets, high fat diets. We love our meats, you know, and that's the same thing that everyone else eats, really. And so that's the main thing that chronic kidney disease patients.
Okay. So when you do have chronic kidney disease, how does that affect your day-to-day routine? Can you ability to work? Can you take care of your family? Can you continue to be active? You know.
Well, because chronic kidney disease is actually really an umbrella term. So, you know, it really covers a whole spectrum of people who suffer from kidney pathologies from one cause or the other. So if you're having kidney problems as a result of, for example, a blood pressure, for example, and that's the only thing that it affects you in, your kidney function is mildly reduced, you can do whatever you want, really. I mean, like, you can live an active, healthy life. In fact, you should live an active, healthy lifestyle. You should, you know, not let it hinder you. On the other hand, if you have bad enough kidney function that, you know, and you're not yet on dialysis for it to take care of your waste product and water regulation, etc., and walking a few steps makes you out of breath, then yeah, you have to limit your activity, you know, in a way that you are comfortable with.
So you need to listen to your body.
You need to listen to your body, absolutely.
Okay. So more and more patients in Malaysia will probably require, you know, they will be more dependent on the health system going forward, given the number of diabetics that we have. And as you say, you're seeing younger and younger people with chronic kidney disease. Do you think setting up dialysis centres is really the answer?
It's a plaster. It's a mechanism to deal with those who have actually progressed to that stage. If we don't set up dialysis centres, there'll be no way to deal with it, I suppose. But that is just a means of dealing with the outcome of kidney failure. A lot of attention should be and is being placed on preventing patients from getting there in the first place. And I think that's where a lot of our efforts should be. You know, if you do have it, let's prevent it from getting worse. If you don't have it yet, let's prevent you from actually getting it. If unfortunately you've got there, then we need to have a treatment for you, of course, because you can still continue to live an active, healthy life. And that's the plan. And whether that's dialysis or transplant, I think the ultimate goal, if you already have kidney failure, is to restore you as much as possible to a regular life or a normal life, a life that you will be pleased to live. And I think that is the different stages of our care.
So I suppose big picture is really, how do you improve on, you know, primary prevention of non-communicable diseases, really.
Correct. And I think that's been the focus of the Ministry of Health for the last, 5 to 10 years, because we've dealt fairly well with infectious diseases and so on. So the next step in our evolution of healthcare is how to deal with all these non-communicable diseases. you know...
Which we never thought.
Which comes with being a developing, affluent, mm-hmm. you know, type of country. So in a way, it's a reflection of the fact that we're wealthier as a whole. But we don't need to take the same steps that our developed country, mm-hmm. you know, friends have actually taken. And they've actually gone through this process, you know. Absolutely. So we don't need to step in those same footprints. We can actually... mob to make our own decisions.
Yeah, but it's always been mind-boggling for me as to why we just don't use those developing countries as an example.
Yeah.
And prevent. It's the same with, you know, I look at Japan, they're an aging population. We know we're getting there. Yeah. Just learn.
Exactly. Or we look at America, you know. They're definitely not lean and, you know. I don't mean to say it, but they, it's a fast food nation. I mean, like you've seen all the, you know, and we're going there. Let me just tell you. I mean, we're in, look around you. I mean, it's full.
We're racing there. Yeah. Okay. Would you have a message on chronic kidney disease?
Yeah, well, in the immortal words of Spock, I suppose, live long and prosper.
Thank you very much for joining me. Dr. Tan Lee Peng, consultant nephrologist from Ara Damansara Medical Center, speaking to us about kidney disease and your diet on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.